Josh Pate, this is such an interesting tweet he posted. Top five programs in the SEC right now. He just randomly decided to include this. And look, there are all different types of responses. But the thing that really shocked me as you go down the list is how many people don't think LSU is a top five SEC program. But I don't think that's the big issue. Where is LSU on that list? Why are they not comfortably in the top five? Because if you were to look just a few years ago, and let's just say 2019 LSU had just happened, and we had the end of the Ed Orgeron tenure be where it is now, and we get a huge coaching upgrade. You get Brian Kelly in the house, who is a college football Hall of Famer, who has multiple playoff appearances to his resume. That's something we don't have. And we're comfortably not in the top five? Let me ask you an honest question. Is LSU a better program than Tennessee is right now? You see Josh Heupel as the thumbnail image. You guys know I am a Tennessee YouTuber. I cover them pretty heavily during the season. Tennessee college football fans are amongst the best in all of the SEC. I would put them at number two, only behind us, removing my bias from the equation. Guess what? I think they're the best fans in the SEC. They've got some things going right now. Is Tennessee a better program than LSU right now? What about people saying South Carolina? There's a lot of people out there that believe in Shane Beamer, and they believe in Lenore Sellers. There's plenty of people out there that are bringing up Ole Miss, Texas A&M. There's quite a few that say Texas A&M. So I think everybody would agree that at this current juncture, the top three college football programs in the SEC, we're talking just college football, Texas, Alabama, Georgia. Those three are on a different planet right now than everybody else in my mind. But I would still have LSU number four. Now, top five job in all of college football, I probably would say no to that. Ohio State, to me, is the best job in college football. But look, I know a lot of you are wondering, might bring this up now. It's a good question. Because, like I said, a few years ago, you would not even have to think about LSU being a top three SEC program. We were firmly number three, if not number two, after 2019 LSU. And the point I want everyone to take away from this, we are moving downwards instead of upward. Another thing. As far as the college football playoff is concerned, I have seen so many playoff brackets, early predictions going into next year, saying, look, LSU will be in the college football playoff. I've seen us as a 10 seed. I've seen us as a 12 seed. I've seen us hosting a game next year as a 7 seed. How awesome would that be? I've seen all those brackets. And I know it's so daggum early. I don't know if I can get there, y'all. I don't know if I can get there. It's tough for me to get there. Why? Well, all the great college football playoff teams last year, you know what they had in common? All of them. They had really good safety play. We did not have that last year. Most of them could run the football. We couldn't do that. Most of them had who many would consider to be one of the better play callers in college football. Ohio State had Chip Kelly. Texas had Steve Sarkisian. And the list goes on and on. Are a lot of you comfortable with Joe Sloan going into next year? Play callers are everything in the modern game. Everything. What's our run game going to look like next year? We bring in Alex Atkins, who comes in with a lot of run game pedigree. This is a guy, I've watched him give seminars on the run game, and they are very good, very informative. He has really ridiculous football IQ. I, at the Super Bowl last week, had dinner with someone who is in Alex Atkins' orbit from his Florida State days. And he is still perplexed as to why Florida State fired Alex Atkins. And I'll tell you why. It's because they needed a fall guy. How could this guy go from being one of the more well-respected assistant coaches in all of college football to fired? There needs to be a fall guy. So I like Alex Atkins a lot. I think he's going to do some good things here as the tight ends coach. But look, the bottom line is I still have LSU as a top five program in the SEC. I think a more interesting question, because it is a more intermediate future thing, are they a top five SEC program going into next year? I think that actually gets a little bit more murky. I do. Now, I'm not sure if Texas is better than LSU. I would like to think that they are, but they're having to replace a lot. But I would say they're better. I would say Georgia's better, but it is what it is at this point with their quarterback room. And then what about Tennessee, who we just mentioned a minute ago? I think most would consider those teams top five in the SEC or in that same or in that vicinity. You don't have to play any of them. So I still think LSU gets a somewhat favorable schedule, but their non-conference gets harder with a road game to start the season at Clemson. And then you get year two of Lenore Sellers. You get to year two of DJ Lagway. It's going to be really, really, really hard. Okay. Now, all of that aside, obviously LSU baseball starts up pretty soon. Obviously LSU women's basketball continues. I will not be talking too much LSU men's basketball because they've hurt me too much. They have hurt me too much. The only defense of Matt McMahon that I can give before I get to all of your questions tonight, the only defense is that this, take this for what it's worth, is the best conference in college basketball in a long time. Not my words. I listened to Jay Billis talk about this. Jay Billis, who played at Duke, okay? He thinks the SEC is beyond special this year in college basketball. All the top 10 teams, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, those are football programs. So it's hard to win in men's basketball right now. Because the teams are so damn good. And the coaches are really freaking good. All right? This is what I would do if I was LSU. I don't think Matt McMahon could come back next year. I think they will do it. I do think McMahon will be back next season. I don't think they should do that, but take that for what it's worth. I would go hire Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino is the best college basketball coach ever. Well, what about Duke at UCLA? Cool. All the national championships. Coach Wooden, he's a GOAT. Bob Knight, sure. But Rick Pitino is the most talented college basketball coach I have ever laid my eyes on. But he's 70 whatever gazillion years old. What's happening around the world right now? World leaders are being high, being old is the rage. Politics, entertainment, Raiders. Who do the Raiders go hire? Pete Carroll. I don't care. Rick Pitino's old. Rick Pitino in a stretcher can outcoach 70% of college basketball coaches. So let's do it. Let's freaking do it. Rick Pitino to LSU. I know he wouldn't want to do it. He's a Northeast guy. Whatever. Go get him. If Scott Woodward wants to make the splashiest hire, go hire Rick Pitino. Pay him $10 million a year. I don't give a damn. We're going to be good. We sat out of Blaine, who says LSU is a top five program. What's up, Tony the Tiger, Tyler, LA Mom, BT, Christopher. So many beautiful faces on a glorious, glorious Tuesday night. So good to be back with you. Obviously, I was on the road last week doing Super Bowl stuff. It was a lot of fun. Big shout out to Believe and the Saints Show. We did a lot of really good things there. And obviously, we'll talk some Kellen Moore a little bit later. The bottom line, though, is New Orleans is the best live event city on the planet Earth. I freaking love walkability. If you've ever been to Europe, you know how fun walkability is. You can't have a major sporting event in San Francisco like they are next season. The stadium is an hour away from the city. But that's where the Super Bowl is going to be next year. New Orleans, a lot of you were down there. I got to see some of you. I had a busy day today, so I wasn't able to put together a little photo montage. But it's always fun. I don't have obviously, we have a huge community, but I don't have some big following like Pat McAfee or someone like that. But it was definitely a very, 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 very fun experience. So there you go. Mick, good to see you. What's up, man? Jay, what's good? An honorary brother in your frat. There you go.
So Chance is admitting that him and Rick Pitino were pledge brothers.
They went through it together. Mick, we hope you're feeling better. It's good to see you. Until we are in the playoffs, a serious contender to be in the playoffs at the end of this season, season after season, then we are not a top five program. I will say, looking at the poll results here, 55% of you have us a top three program. I don't know. Now, the next thing. And I do think this is important when it comes to looking at LSU next year. What do you take away from spring football, if anything at all? And to me, what I would do in spring is come to a conclusion of what you envision your run game to look like. What do you think will work as far as running the football is concerned? Is it something you can even do with Garrett Nussmeier and Joe Sloan calling the shots? Because obviously, if you have a pocket quarterback, it hurts your rushing in a way, especially when you had the best dual threat quarterback this side of Lamar Jackson before Garrett. But the run game has got to be better. You've got to determine what you want it to look like. What are you going to base everything out of? What is your identity? You hear that all the time. What is your identity as a team? Now, that word gets thrown around quite a bit because in the modern game, with film being the way that it is, how good the coaching is, how athletic the defensive players are, every defensive player is just so much faster, so you can't really do the same things you used to do. But what I want LSU to figure out, and it may be something they can't answer at this juncture of the offseason, what is your play? What is that go-to rushing attack that will get you going next season? I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's outside zone. I don't care if it's inside zone. I have some film study buddies. I believe duo should be our base run. But I'm fine with counter. I love a good counter scheme. I think it's a thing of beauty. But in order to run counter, you've got to have dudes in the middle of your offensive line that are nimble and are flexible. To me, the best counter run blockers are not the biggest, not the fastest, but the smartest. It does involve processing. Right? If a defensive line stems and the guy you're supposed to kick out on your pull changes, or if the guy you're supposed to kick out just runs himself out of the play, can you find the next guy? Can you pick up the scraps? Whatever it is, find what that thing is and hope it works. Now, I want to bring up something in this analysis is brought to you by our friends at the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth Experience. Check it out, xyanimaging.com. So we released a deep dive on Patreon earlier today. Once again, sign up for your PHL Patreon membership. I will cover your first month if you sign up in the next hour. And on top of that, you get a Joe Burrow card in the mail. So I want to talk a little bit about where college football has changed. And the biggest change outside of what all of us know, NIL, transfer portal, college football playoff, the overall move toward bowls, defensive coordinator salaries. Did you see this today? DJ Durkin of Auburn, $2.5 million. He's not even that good, $2.5 million. What if I told you that college football play has declined when it comes to the amount of possessions per game? It has gone way down, all right? So coming up after this, quick word from our friends at Zion Imaging, you're going to see something that will shock you.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I got to show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth Experience, serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. College football possessions per game has gone way down. And by way down, I mean way down. So you'll see in the legendary 2007 season, obviously LSU winning the national championship, the first two-loss national champion of the era until Ohio State, obviously, this past year. There was an average of 27.5 possessions per game. And from 2007 to 2024, there has been an average of 26.1 possessions per game. Now, I will be honest. I look at a lot of charts, a lot of analytics. I rarely see a chart that declines in one direction year after year after year. Normally, there is some kind of course correction. But as you'll see here, the amount of possessions per game in a college football game has gone way down. We went from 27.5 in 2007 to 24.5 in 2024. Now, this is a little bit different because BC does, in fact, filter out garbage time possessions. So that does change some things. But you'll see in 2014, 45% of all games had 28-plus possessions. And in 2024, 45% of games had fewer than 24 possessions, which is obviously below the season average. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, one moment that actually happened last year, and Jared, thank you so much for the super chat. One moment that actually happened to me this past year, and it got someone pretty angry. I won't say who, but that's okay. I lambasted LSU for our clock management error at the end of the first half versus Alabama in my film study. Got a pretty heavily worded message, and that's okay. I was that pissed off. Part of why that's the case, though, is that if possessions per game go down, the value of every possession goes up, especially if you're losing. So why are possessions down in college football? I won't go too deep into it. I did on Patreon. There's a lot of different reasons, but quarterbacks are better. Teams are more aggressive on fourth down, so that extends possessions. And then obviously the new clock rules. But the truth is, and this is as kindly as I could say it, I don't feel our possessions last year overall offensively were good possessions. Now, were we a good offense? Yeah, if you look at EPA per play, explosiveness, all that stuff, we were a good EPA team, but we weren't really an explosive team. And one area where we struggled is a stat called success rate. And what success rate is basically telling you, was a play successful? So on first down, a successful play gets you a 4-yard run or a 5-yard pass, whatever. The problem with that is we had a lot of 3rd-and-7s that we converted last year. Garrett Nussmeier was the best quarterback in college football on 3rd-and-7 and longer. LSU was a very good 3rd-and-long team. But do you think we're going to be a very good 3rd-and-long team again next year? That's tough to replicate. It's really, really, really tough to replicate. If I, as a defense coordinator, know that the other team is a good 3rd-and-long team, there are things I could do to work around that. Another thing is a lot of 3rd-and-long conversions have to do with chemistry. Mason Taylor and Garrett Nussmeier had really good chemistry. And what I would do if I were you is take a look at how many 3rd-and-longs and 4th-and-longs we converted with Mason Taylor this past year that were of a high degree of difficulty. So there's a lot of different reasons why we were not a good possession team and why we didn't have great possessions on both sides of the football. Some of it is running the football. Some of it is stopping the run on the other side. Some of it is play calling on both sides. And all those things come together. While possessions are going down, we have got to get better. We have got to become more efficient, not only in terms of, you know, that one clock management error, but just the overall operation. Hey, Buster, appreciate it. I'm not looking as fly as you. Goodness gracious. Freaking love that. You're looking pretty fly, brother. Look at that. Look at Buster. Jared's super chat says, we won't need 3rd-and-long next season. Love it. Freaking love it. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be live at 6 p.m. Central on Wednesdays. We might move Tuesdays to 6 p.m. as well during the off season. Let's go to BT. Back to my original point. LSU needs a truly dominant offensive line since we do not have a dual threat, but still very talented quarterback. Yeah, I do think that is also true. And I think it's also fair. I really do. Now, the next thing, outside of the possession rant. Part of me seeing all these college football playoff brackets where they say LSU is in the field of 12, there's nothing more I want than that. Okay? But what do you think LSU's starting offensive line will look like next year? Do you have who your tackles are going to be sorted out? Do you have who your guards will be sorted out? There's two players we would put our life savings on as being starters. They're both transfers. Chemistry and cohesiveness, I tend to think, is overrated. But I do think there's value in it at the offensive line position. So I've been asked quite a bit, where are the weaknesses? Where are the strengths of this team? Obviously, I think defensive tackle will be a pretty good position for LSU next year, as will defensive end. I think if Whit Weeks is healthy, I think he'll be an all-SEC, all-American player. I think Harold Perkins will hopefully find a role. I think a big question for Perk is, where will you play? But not only that, let's just say the ball is being run in your direction. Can you be effective in stopping it? We don't need any more difficult reps setting the edge in the run game. It's a problem. It's a problem. And then the last thing as far as LSU going to the playoff next year, what is your rotation going to look like at tight end and wide receiver? Who are your pass catchers going to be? I do think there last year with Garrett was a propensity to force the football to Kyren Lacy. I do think, as far as Garrett is concerned, Kyren Lacy was a guy that he just forced the football to way too often. So we'll see what happens there. Now, here's what we're going to do. I do have to get up super early in the morning. My dog has to go have a minor procedure, so please pray for me. I don't know why the hell I got to get up at 6. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as I possibly can. If you do Super Chat, we'll keep this party moving. Big thanks to Michael Brockers for joining us on Radio Row last week at the Super Bowl. I highly recommend you go check out that interview. Bert Kreischer is ironically the thumbnail of that, but just go check it out. Let's see here. We got a Devonta Smith signing. Okay. Wes Brooks, what's good, man? I see H-Town Creole in here. Let's go. Let's go to here. Pegasus says, thoughts on Kellen Moore becoming the next Saints head coach. I like it. I do. Look, the first thing you have to know is we're probably not going to be that good next year. With that said, though, before Derek Carr getting hurt, Saints were a good team. They should not have lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. A 3rd-and-16 to Dallas Goedert was a difference between you beating them, the team that won the Super Bowl. It was really hard to beat the Bengals by double digits, especially in their house. The Eagles did it. It's really hard to make the Chiefs look bad. Eagles did it. It's very hard to beat Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. The Eagles did it. So maybe the Saints are in a little bit better of a spot than we initially thought. But you really need to be ready for this team to not be that good next year. All right? And you got to give him at least a 2 or 3 year window to fix what we have to fix. There is a lot of fixing that needs to be done. And I said this on my Believe show. Make sure you check it out. Believe in Saints. I am not sure if he can overcome the general manager situation. Mickey Loomis isn't the worst general manager I've ever seen. But I will also tell you, I just don't know if Mickey's a guy that's in the prime of his career. I think you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and them winning the Super Bowl. How did they win that Super Bowl? Well, they won it with A.J. Brown, Cooper DeJean, and, of course, Jalen Carter, all three of which were eventual compensation for what the Saints traded to the Eagles when they moved up to get multiple picks in the first round, which in turn turned out to be Chris Olave and Trevor Penning. Let's go to Blanche. Donkey teeth. Dude, he does have some teeth. Speaking of teeth, I went to the dentist today. Shout out partners, Sequoia Dental. Check them out, sequoiadental.com. Let's see here. Dang. I don't think he's the worst GM in the league, no. But I think Kellen Moore's fine. I mean, I prefer Kellen Moore over Mike Kafka. I take I would take in Kellen Moore. Would I have taken him over Aaron Glenn? Probably, because you know I wanted an offensive coach. I do think it's impressive that Aaron Glenn told Aaron Rodgers, "You got to go, bro." I probably would have done the same thing. See here. Juwan Johnson is an All-American talent at safety. I would do the same thing. I think Juwan Johnson's offensive reps this year were fine. They obviously they weren't terrible, and it was a jarring thing, you know, to move him from defense back to offense back to defense. From defense to offense. I'm just saying I would move him back to defense, right? That was a plan initially. And you know, I have always been a big believer and moving guys around. You know, this stuff has worked some of the time. Other times, it's just not worked out, right? They move Jacoby Stevens from DB to receiver, got him back to DB, it was successful. You take a look at someone like Ron Brooks, who's a friend of the channel. He was an offensive player when he got to LSU, moving to DB. He became a key part of the greatest secondary arguably ever at LSU. So, moving Juwan Johnson back and forth, I think it's fine, but find him a role and stick to it. Let's go to Chance. He says, Dallas Cowboy fans are jealous. They want to kill him more. That's right, Corey Webster. That guy was kind of good at football. So it's interesting. There's much to be made of Tom Brady doing the broadcast. I do think Greg Olson's a better broadcaster, but I do think Brady got better. I do. You know, this never gets brought up when it comes to Tom Brady. Never, ever, ever gets brought up. But do you know how good Tom Brady's been with players that went to LSU? Like, really think about how many really good all-time LSU players that actually kind of became role players in their professional career that Tom Brady took to the next level. Kev Falk, Leonard Fournette, Jeremy Hill, even though he was hurt after one game, Jay Hill won a ring, got a ring. Brandon JoJo LaFell was one of Tom. I was listening to Tom Brady on the Herd. Tom Brady loved him, some Brandon JoJo LaFell. Threw a very critical touchdown to him in the Super Bowl. And the reason why this, you know, floats into my mind, the most underrated play in NFL history, defensive underrated play, was Corey Webster versus Randy Moss in the Super Bowl where the Patriots are trying to go undefeated. Tom Brady threw one of the more ridiculous throws to Randy Moss, and Corey Webster made a ridiculous play on it. And if that ball was completed, it would have been the greatest throw in NFL history. It would have saved an undefeated season. But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. As Chance points out, Stephen Ridley. There are a lot of players that have had their careers highlighted by Tom Brady. Now, you know, does Tom Brady like LSU? I don't know. But it's just amazing. And I think about it quite a bit with Tom Brady calling the Super Bowl in New Orleans. I know he's not a fan favorite here, but my best Saints moment, I mean, obviously everyone is going to say Tracy Porter, but my best Saints moment was that year going to Saints and Patriots. Last little Brady thing here. The only guy historically who took Tom to the woodshed head-to-head was Drew Brees. Just saying. 5-3 career. There's a crazy call in one of the regular season ones. 6-2 should have been the record. And that's why, you know, Brees not getting that Super Bowl versus Brady in 2018 was so criminal. It's not just the fact that Drew Brees didn't get that Super Bowl, where if he would have won it, he would have been 2-0 in his career versus Peyton Manning in one Super Bowl and Tom Brady in another. It's that there are only two quarterbacks. Actually, there's a few more. But other quarterbacks who are in the top 75 in passing yards ever. The only quarterbacks who were two games over 500 versus Brady was Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson. And obviously, Lamar only played two games versus Brady. No, I get what you're saying, Law V, about Burrow not being a dual threat quarterback. I would consider him a dual threat quarterback. I would. Now, it just depends on your definition of dual threat. But you're right. You know, he was really good at reading openings and all of that. But, you know, his running was so big in 2019. I would also point out, go look at the A&M game, where I think Burrow ran 29 times. You know, QB run was pretty amazing in that game. So, obviously, he's not dual threat now. But yeah, Joe, I would consider him a dual threat quarterback. He ran for 350-ish yards in the Natty year. And boy, every single one of them was big because his best rushing game was against Florida that year, 91 yards. And then Clemson, Auburn, Alabama, the runs were so big.
So it.
Yeah, I bet the Chiefs pretty heavy. I thought they were going to win. I do. Now, this was interesting. I remember doing this interview in New Orleans. Like, I'll share this. This is, I need you guys to go reply on this because I'd be interested in doing some content with these guys. John Boy Media interviewed me on Bourbon. I like John Boy Media. You know, John Boy does the breakdowns. I really like them. So I did the interview. I didn't know where to find it, but believe it or not, the sideline reporter of the Colorado Rockies is a friend of mine. She was in my class, Kel Swingard, and she works for John Boy on top of doing all the stuff she does for the Rockies. Also just had her first kid, I believe. And she tagged me in this. Look, there's me right there. So y'all go reply under it and say it's the best thing you've ever seen. And I would love to do, because they're baseball guys. And obviously they know ball as well. But they have a baseball background. And I really do like John Boy. I really do. I'm not fronting. And I'm also a fake Yankees fan. I was a Jeter and Rivera fan. So when they retired, and I'd be straight up with them if they ever offered me, you know, an opportunity. When Jeter and Rivera retired, I was no longer a Yankees fan. It hit me like a ton of bricks because I had so much Yankees shirts, everything. When they retired, I said, it's over.
It's over.
So we'll take a few more here, and then I do need to hit the hay. 6 a.m. to take my dog to the freaking vet. I am also sad at my final college basketball game that I'm calling on Monday. I hate not calling games. I love calling basketball games. There's something to be said about being in a packed arena. It's just fun. Now, at the level I call, it's not the absolute most packed arenas, but sometimes it is. So I need to start putting myself out there, do more play-by-play opportunities. I would love to do it. Let's see. Big discussion about dual threat quarterbacks in the chat. Oh, yeah, Nuts would have gotten drafted pretty high, honestly. I you know, there's a piece of me that thinks, well, maybe Garrett Nussmeier, from his own vantage point, should have gone and got into the draft because he could have snuck into the first round. But Nuss, based on his tape, looking at it from a purely NFL perspective, I wouldn't have done that. I would not have told him to go to the draft, and I'm glad he didn't. Not only from an LSU perspective, but his own personal perspective. And now he's in a position where his dad will likely be moving to New Orleans to coach alongside Kellen Moore. So I'm pretty excited about that for Garrett. I know it's a big personal leap for him. So really pumped up about that. Now, that'll do it for me. So good to be back at the studio. As much as I love being in New Orleans for the Super Bowl, I'm back here with you. The baby, the flagship, Power Hour LSU. Shout out our Super Chats for the evening. Jared, thank you so much. Flying solo tonight. It's all good, baby. Now, don't forget, this is very key. Please, please, obviously, tell the world how much you like that. Tell the world how much you enjoyed that tweet. But more importantly, if you are a patron, like Jared, like TJ, go to our Patreon breakdown, and you will see a deeper dive on how plays per game have not necessarily gone down, but possessions per game has gone down, and what that could mean for LSU. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight, I'm cheating on my diet with some sweet potato fries, sweet tea, pecan pie, homemade one. Sweet potato fries, don't sleep on them. Let's go.